Down to business on News Talk.
Sponsored by Bank of Ireland. We understand business. Choose the bank that's here to help you rise to today's business challenges and tomorrow's.
Now, Peter Brook is one of the most influential automotive designers in American automotive history, lauded for his design work on the Shelby Daytona and Corvette Stingray. Outside of cars, his life has also included hang gliding and other pursuits. He's a fascinating man who's lived a fascinating life, and he's in Ireland this week to visit Wicklow entrepreneur Norman Crowley, who 2 years ago on this show let me drive an electric Ferrari. More on that later. Peter, it's delighted to have you here in studio with us this morning.
Well, this is my first time in Ireland, and I'm really excited to be here.
Okay, well, I'm delighted you came to us first, Peter, because you have, you know, had such an interesting career, and I want you maybe to share some of that with us. But you started taking photographs of fast cars. Then you ended up going to design school in Los Angeles. You were racing right at the cutting edge back in the 50s, 60s. Tell us a little bit about that those early days that you had.
Well, Southern California was really the center of the performance automotive industry. I mean, really from the time of the early 30s, people became very interested in high-performance automobiles, and it was so easy for a young kid at that time to buy an old Model T or Model A Ford and do some modifications to it. And we have a unique situation in Southern California because we've got some dry lakes just north of Los Angeles, where people were able to run speed trials,
right?
You know, and super flat area, you know, and so it became the center of the whole development. Began an industry of people developing high performance equipment just for production automobiles. So the whole hot rod industry grew up there, and it was just a matter of a culture of being car guys. If you were a young kid in school, that was the center of your life, was automotive.
So were you a guy who was tinkering with engines and
absolutely
rebuilding chassis and all sorts of stuff as a kid?
12 years old, started with it. And actually, I had my first job in a shop, a garage, as an assistant mechanic, you know, pretty much cleaning tools and sweeping the floors, but working with older mechanics who were racing their cars, and I was going with them. Being 12 years old at that time, I didn't have a driver's license, but I could go with them to these different events. And I just grew up with an older group of guys that I missed that whole 12 to 18 year old sort of stupid area, and grew up with guys that were really focused on cars, and that's been my whole life ever since.
Wow. And tell me then about the Art Center College of Design in LA. You formally learned your trade there around design and all that came after. Was that it?
Yes, the Art Center College of Design is probably the number one school for automotive design in the world. Since then, there have been several other schools that have developed, but that was the real leader, and it was the place where if you wanted to learn how to design cars, you went there. And it wasn't a school just for designing automobiles. They taught fine art, they taught color, they taught graphic lettering, photography, every sort of creative graphic work. But the real thing that made that school famous was its graduates in automotive design, which we called transportation. That was what your major was. And from that point, the major automobile companies came there to look for students who wanted to work at that point. And I was fortunate enough to go back to General Motors as their youngest designer at the age of 19.
Wow. And where did you come across the world-renowned Carroll Shelby? How did you interact? What was the interaction there?
Well, my main interest, of course, from the time that I was 12 was going racing. And I realized from the experience of how expensive it was that there was no way I was going to have enough money to be a top driver. So I started looking for a backup program, and designing automobiles was it. So having that background and going back to Detroit and having a chance to work on some of the high-performance projects, I still focused on wanting to be a driver. So that couldn't happen in the United States at that time until you were 21. We had a legal limit on driving competition at 21. So as soon as I was 21, I left Detroit, went back to Southern California to be in the center of the racing industry, and worked for a top little shop in Hollywood with a friend named Max Balchowski. And he was a specialist in building what we call specials. And these were American hot rods with modified American V8 motors, where most of the time at the early series, people were racing Ferraris and Maseratis, and the wealthy people had those type of cars. But Max developed cars with American V8s that were very competitive. And at that point, this was 1959, Carroll Shelby had just won Le Mans with Roy Salvadori, a top English driver. The two of them had won the 24 Hours of Le Mans. And he was retiring because of a heart problem and came back to Los Angeles. But he wanted to spend his last year doing some racing with an American car. So he got together with Max Balchowski and said, "Can I drive your old Yeller special?" The name of it was Old Yeller because it was painted this yellow color. So at that time when I was working with Max, I met Carroll. And at that point, I realized that he had a vision of doing some really interesting projects. He took a shine to me and asked me to run his school for racing drivers. It was one of the first ones in the United States. There was one good one in England at that time. So with my background in racing, I became his chief instructor for the Carroll Shelby School of High Performance Driving.
Wow.
At Riverside Raceway. And it was a dream job for me because I could be driving race cars every day.
Wow. Then, we'll come back to some of the racing in a minute, but your evolution then into things like hang gliding, that again must have been fascinating. Why did you move from motorsport to hang gliding, and what did you learn in the hang gliding world?
It was interesting because I had a shop doing automotive high performance work, and it was just a mile or so from the beach area. And I was driving home there one day, and I looked at this giant sand dune that had been constructed there because they were building a huge power plant next to the Los Angeles International Airport. And this huge sand dune had been built there. And these hippies had started flying these very early hang gliders off of the top of the sand dune. And, I mean, they were very, very crude. They were made with bamboo poles, visqueen plastic, duct tape, and whatever. But the advantage was that the glide ratio from the top of the sand dune down to the beach, you know, maybe 50 to 100 yards or so, was only about 10 feet off the ground. So if the glider broke or you did something wrong, you could only fall about 10 feet into the soft sand. So I stopped to watch this, and it was fascinating. And one of the guys says, "Hey, you want to try this?" And I said, "Well, sure, tell me all about it." So he explained how you control the hang glider by weight shift and strapped me in it, and I ran off down the hill, and I made this perfect flight all the way down to the beach, and I was hooked. I said, "This is flight freedom." I said, "Fantastic." So I began to learn about that. So one of the things I wanted to do, because I had a shop that was capable of doing nice machine work and stuff, was to develop some special hardware to make an improved glider. Instead of bamboo poles, we could make them out of aluminum tubing, and went from visqueen plastic to Dacron. And so I invented my own hang gliders, we ended up being the largest builder of hang gliders in the world at that time.
What a fascinating story.
Yep.
When's the last time you went hang gliding?
Oh, it's been at least 40, 50 years now.
Right. Yeah. So I'm fascinated about what brings you to Ireland, Peter. Tell us more.
You know, of course, with my background of designing some well-known cars, I was approached by Norman Crowley, a man with an incredible vision to make a modern version of my classic Daytona Cobra Coupe. But this time it would be electric. So instead of the V8 engine that we had that we developed at Shelby, this would be electric powered. And amazingly, it would have more power and better performance than anything that we'd had back in the day when we were racing the cars in Europe. So it was a very exciting project because what Norman offered was a chance to redesign and rebuild this car with completely modern components and do all the subtle modifications that I'd never had to do with the race car. So it was a chance to do a refinement of the car and make a, a very high-end finished performance car that would be available publicly.
I'm often intrigued by, you know, enthusiasts and people with the fantastic expertise like that you have, that the whole, is it a sellout to go electric, you know, if you're a petrol head?
Oh, you know, I can't tell you the opportunity to work with somebody like this who has, you know, the amazing thing that I've learned in the time that I've been with Norman is that he's had the ability to collect or surround himself with top people in every field. And it's interesting because in my few days here in England and in Ireland, I've gone to meet several people. These people have never met each other. Somehow he's been able to find each group of people that are going to be the nucleus of this project to build this car. And even though a lot of them have not met each other, they've been in contact with Zoom, of course. The COVID thing has kept us apart, and now it's getting closer back together again. But this group of people is incredibly dynamic and fascinating to work with.
Well, give him my regards, because as I was telling you earlier, I was he kindly allowed me to test drive one of his electric Ferraris out there, and it scared the hell out of me. I remember it to this day vividly. So I'm sure your car and the collaboration with you, Peter Brook, is going to be absolutely fascinating. So we wish you well, and thanks for calling in. I know you've had a long flight from the States, and welcome to Ireland. And I hope your encounter and your endeavours with Norman Crowley will bring absolute reward and success to you.
Well, thank you so much. I'm really excited to spend some time in Ireland. So far, the people have been delightful. Thank you.
Cool.